Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 132 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, and I'm joined this week by Matt Willis of Busted fame and of I'm a Celebrity fame as well, all that kind of thing. And it's I keep having one of my favourite conversations. I seem to say it all the time, but these genuinely keep happening, and it's exciting when it's one that, well, not one that I'm not expecting, but like me and Matt don't know each other that well. We'd met twice when we arranged this, I think, or maybe even once. So you never know how it's going to be. But I always often say at the end of this, I don't think I say it on record, but I make a load of notes before these podcasts. And I know it's a really good one when I get to the end and I've not had to look at my notes once. And that was the case here. So yeah, hope you enjoy it. I should mention speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Head there. Thank you for all the support on the Drunkcast tees and on the Rob Alton album At Home With Rob and everything else. You've been amazing in general over Christmas. It's mental going online at Christmas and seeing the amount of people who got Christmas presents from my little a web store. I know that sounds odd, but it's genuinely a lovely and exciting thing because it's Christmas and it's exciting. And the fact that people are excited to get something that I've worked on or put out is lovely. So yeah, anyway, that's the softest and briefest plug for speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Head there if you wish to. Let's get on with the podcast. This is episode 132 with Matt Willis. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. Right, that's not too loud.
Hello.
I'm recording. I'm here with Matt Willis. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm very good.
Also known as Matt from Busted, which that must be a common
that is my name. Reference. I forget my name is actually Matt Willis. Sometimes I'm just Matt from Busted.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I get Matt from McFly.
Yeah.
Which is always a bit more confusing.
Yeah.
I went through a stage of when Busted is kind of split up, and McFly were doing loads of stuff of just people, like kind of drunk guys, coming up to me and singing me McFly songs.
Brilliant.
Be like, great, that's really nice of you. That's not actually my
song.
That must have been
heavenly. It was weird, because was there that much a crossover? Because it seemed McFly got big after you kind of stopped.
Yeah, like they supported us
on tour.
So it's kind
of the passing of the torch kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of. I think our management put those guys together.
Yeah.
You know, because I think they kind of saw that maybe Busted was coming to an end.
Yeah.
You know, but Tom from McFly was actually going to be in Busted at one point.
Right.
He auditioned like the same time as Charlie did. So me and James started the band on our own, and no one really kind of got this kind of weird kind of duo that we were.
Yeah.
And so so they kind of went, you know, we just don't really get these two guys.
Yeah.
You know, we like the music. And so we held auditions, and we Charlie auditioned and Tom auditioned.
Yeah.
And we saw Charlie, and we just like, you're perfect. You know, I mean, so we got him on board, and then
tall,
we got signed.
Incredibly handsome, incredible
singer,
anyone would do
ridiculously
that.
Handsome.
A Johnny band,
yeah, you're in.
Tall, talented, handsome. Let's pop you in there. That works.
You're in, mate. So and then literally he got in, and we got signed about a week later.
That's mental.
Yeah.
So again, because it's weird, because a band like Busted was so big. Kind of, it felt like out of nowhere, and it was at a time when there was a lot of manufactured bands, so. Mm. It's interesting to know that you. So were you a two just mates who kind of you started it
as mates, and then
auditioned again as just people trying to start a band, and then kind of labels came in, or was that all?
Yeah, totally. I mean, well, the thing, me and James actually auditioned for another band, and we didn't get in.
Yeah,
and we met a few times before because we had the same acting agent. Me and James were on an acting agency as kids, and we kind of met at various kind of acting auditions and stuff like that, and kind of different theatre things. And then we auditioned for this band in the same time, and we both didn't get in, and so we just decided to do our own thing. And so we went away. We wrote silly little songs, and I moved into his house in Southend, and we kind of lived there for 2 years and just wrote.
That's amazing. Kind of, I went to school in Southend.
Oh, that's did
my,
you really?
That's my end.
Oh, right.
Tell me
nice.
More. Yeah, and that's all
amazing.
All familiar.
Nice, man. Well, I loved it. We lived in Fort Bay.
Yeah.
For about 2 years, and I had an amazing time, and we just kind of wrote songs and went to Tots.
Yeah,
and
great.
Nightclub, and just had an amazing 2 years, and kind of wrote silly songs. And then,
did you gig a lot at that point?
No, none.
Just writing.
We were just mucking around. Really, to be honest, we didn't really feel like we were ready to do a gig. We only had about five songs.
Yeah.
You know, and every song we wrote would just get kind of dismissed immediately because it wasn't as good as the other ones we had, and so we kind of never really followed them up. So we had about five songs for about 2 years, and then we
I
just
love that. It's,
yeah,
it's a killer trait of replacing songs. I've had annoyance with that over the years with bands supporting us, that there'll be a band I've loved all their early stuff, and obviously bands develop and move on, and then they're supporting us in 2 years, and I'm like, that old song you used to play, like, it's brilliant. It's you've replaced it, but it's not had the audience it deserves.
You shouldn't have.
It's that weird thing of going, right, we've got to remove songs to add them. We can't just build up a repertoire.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of us for a little while. We kind of and then we kind of wrote a bunch more, and then we put an advert in The Enemy, and Charlie came down to that, you know, to that audition.
That's proper as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was amazing, and he came down to that, and he loved it, and he jumped on board, and we kind of went from there.
Amazing. Mm. So what was stuff like before that? You grew up in Tooting, right?
Well, I was born in Tooting. I actually grew up in Kingston.
You grew up in Kingston. So what were you kind of into? Like, what were you doing at school and things like that?
I always wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, like, I say that, to be honest, I didn't really know. I just wanted to be, I don't know. I remember not wanting to be where I was.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Quite apparent. Like, I remember kind of thinking that quite a lot, of just kind of not being happy where I was, you know, kind of wanting to do something else.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because I often wonder if that's a trait of people who are.
I'll just shut that door a little bit.
That's wicked. Oh, we're letting some banging beats in slightly. There you go.
It's going to help at all.
It's absolutely fine. Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I wonder if that's a sign of what's ahead. Because I, similarly at school, everyone seemed to want to go and work in an office in London, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but felt it wasn't that.
Yeah.
I'm never sure if the stuff that happened hadn't happened, I would just be miserable somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Or I would have grown out of that. Is our type of jobs just the fact that we've never had to grow up? Like, we've got to keep playing and keep going, I don't want to do that grown-up stuff. I want to mess about and be creative.
Yeah, completely, man. And to be honest, I would have been a hairdresser.
Yeah.
You know, I would have done anything that would have got me out from where I was and been doing something that I would have really got into. You know, I literally felt like, be it acting or music or theatre or anything to just kind of do something that, you know, was not what I was doing at the time. I would have just grabbed it. And it would have got me out of where I lived and out where I was and kind of stuff like that. You know, I kind of always felt like I didn't quite belong where I was.
And that's good, because it kind of, I mean, as we'll get into along the way, it leaves you open in your career to a lot of options and things like that. The fact that you didn't, from all the time as a kid, go, I want to be a musician.
Mm.
That's all I want to be. Then it's allowed you to present and do theatre and all sorts of things like that, I think, because you've not got that. I think it's an easier transition to make if you're not in your mind going, oh, I'm a musician, I'm transitioning over. If you kind of always just felt like, I know what I'm not, I don't know what I am, but I know what I'm not.
That's,
I'm just kind of
so
avoiding
true.
That.
That's exactly what I feel like sometimes. Yeah. I don't know whether or not I am, supposed to be in a band or not. I love it.
Yeah.
But was I born to do this? I don't think so. I never really thought it was. You know, I would have been like, at one point I wanted to be a hairdresser, and I kind of got an apprenticeship in a hairdresser.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to be the best fucking hairdresser.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then I got in a band, and I went on and did that, you know, with James, and I moved out of the area, you know, but it was one point in my life, and that was going to be it.
That was
the goal.
It's interesting how things just happen and progress. So what kind of, it also happened all quite young for you boys. So what age were you when Busted started to blow up? It blew up
when I was 18. No, 19.
It's in like 19, 2000.
Yeah,
of, wasn't it?
2002, I think, was our first single.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were kind of, I met James in like 2000.
Yeah.
And then we did, and then we got Charlie in 2002, and we released a single that year.
Yeah. And then, all kind of just went nuts from there, right?
Yeah, man. Well, it didn't feel like it went nuts at the beginning. It felt like we'd been doing things a long time, even though we hadn't, only a couple of years.
Yeah.
But by the time we got signed and stuff, we kind of felt like we'd been, you know, writing songs and stuff for a while, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, when we actually, once we got signed, and we kind of felt like we finished the album with a producer.
Yeah.
And we kind of had a photo shoot, and then bang, you know, suddenly you're in the charts.
Yeah.
And you're playing the Smash Hits Roadshow with, you know, like Atomic Kitten and people like this that you've seen on telly, and you're just like, what's going on? You know,
it was a really weird time in music in the UK, I think, because there was a lot of pop punk coming over from America, but most of the punk over here, even the lighter side, was more kind of scar tinged and that kind of area, rather than there wasn't a lot that. And I don't think it's any insult to say the bus is a lent on the pop side of pop punk.
Oh no,
very much so. It was pop songs and pop melodies and stuff like that. Had that vibe and excitement though.
Mm, yeah, completely. I mean, to be honest, when we first started writing songs, we were writing songs that were much different to what I got a school for instance, changed everything for us. That kind of changed direction. And that was because I bought the American Pie 2 soundtrack CD on my way to James's house. Cause I watched that movie and I was like, what is all this music? You know, and back in the day, like, I've been into Green Day and Chili Peppers and stuff through my brother. And then I got that CD and it literally just changed our whole band. We were listening to, you know, like, Blink 182 and Three Doors Down and kind of all these kind of, you know, bands. And we were like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we want to be like this. And Sum 41, we discovered all this kind of stuff and Newfound Glory and all these bands that we just wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly we were like, everything that we were doing before that was so rubbish.
Amazing because, again, you list all their bands and they all, in at least in my mind and areas, were huge at that point.
Mm.
Yet, genuinely, I can't think of any British alternatives.
No, I mean, there was only really 100 Reasons who were they weren't really a punk band.
That was still kind of more progressive
rock. Yeah. So it wasn't really, I can't really think of anybody like that. There happened a scene after that.
Yeah.
You know, completely. But before that, no, I don't think there was. Yeah. It was a very much an American thing.
It kind of opened things up. Yeah. Any genre that has the word punk in can be kind of a poison chalice because as soon as you get any success, it's like, well, it's not punk
rock. Completely.
Again, I think from what my view of your guys was like, we were always pop punk.
I never thought we were pop punk. I thought we were pop.
Yeah, it's that interesting thing of your Green Days and Blinks and all these had those formative years of being underground kind of punky bands where they're playing poppy songs, but they're playing it in a dingy club. Therefore, when they get big, it's acceptable. As you guys kind of, as soon as you found that sound, it all just seemed to click.
Mm.
It's then like, well, it's not punk. And then, as you said, well, no, it's not.
Well, it's not pop punk music. It's pop music completely. Yeah. And we tried very hard to write pop songs, you know, because I think me and James, however much we liked those bands and we got really into that scene very quickly, overnight, we started buying magazines and reading all this stuff and kind of searching out for bands and going to record shops and finding different kind of bands that we'd never heard of, you know. But however much we were into that, James was obsessed with a guy called Max Martin, who's a big pop songwriter. He wrote all the kind of Backstreet Boys songs and all the NSYNC songs, Britney songs, and he's since wrote, you know, all the Taylor Swift songs, Katy Perry songs. He's a real behind the scenes mogul.
Yeah.
You know, like he's you know, he's responsible. Any kind of big American pop song you can think of in the last 20 years, Max Martin wrote it.
Yeah,
you know, like, and produced it. He's incredible. And James was obsessed with him even then. So we would literally study what he was doing as well and try and kind of write songs in that kind of vein. You know, like, so we were kind of, we were taking, you know, aspects of, you know, kind of Backstreet Boys kind of melodies and things like that and kind of mixing it with these influences we were getting from.
I fucking love that because, again, it's not something that you were going for, but the punk element comes in that essentially you're trying to write mass market pop songs, but you've not got a mass market budget. You've got a few guitars and you're in a flat in Southend.
Yeah, and we're also not very good singers.
You can't go, right, here's a Backstreet Boys with strings and all these melodies.
Totally,
we've got a couple of guitars. Let's
Let's and everything was on together. A little four track in James's room on two acoustic guitars, yeah. sounding terrible. You know, yeah. and also we're not very good singers. So what we did was we would write things that we could sing.
Yeah.
You know, which were simple little da na 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 just because they were easy to sing, you know.
Yeah.
And they didn't force us to kind of really kind of go for it, you know.
Yeah.
Leave ourselves exposed.
I love it. So how was it when it all kind of blew up and went nuts? Because, again, at quite a young age, suddenly being on all these tours, suddenly having that much exposure. I guess it was kind of pre-social media, so there's some level of barrier and protection, but still you're thrust into the spotlight quite intensely, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, to us, we were kind of, we always felt like the outsiders. We never really felt like we belonged in that kind of thing. You know, yeah. I mean, I remember because we played a lot of those shows, like very early in the day, we kind of, we were constantly on some kind of pop tour with other bands, you know, yeah. we kind of, and we didn't really talk to anybody. No one really kind of wanted to know us because we were like some scruffy kind of like, you know, three kids. Everyone else had like hair and makeup and dancers and,
that awkward you know, thing and if you don't want to be there, they don't want you there. But
yeah.
You're all there.
But we're all there. And also we're kind of killing it,
yeah.
you know, so we were kind yeah. of like, but then we'd walk on stage and we'd go, oh, we kind of do belong here because people seem to be going nuts yeah, to what we're yeah, doing.
It makes sense. You know?
And also, we don't belong down the road because down yeah. the road is proper rock bands yeah. and punk bands, and we don't belong there either. So we belong here more, but, you know, we're just not really accepted by the other people. You know?
Yeah. It's an interesting one as well because it would have all been happening at the kind of age that, as a music fan, your music taste is developing and changing.
Completely,
and
yeah.
things like that. So you're, again, not to keep using myself as an example, but it's where you can compare things.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Logically. But the first single of mine being Thou Shalt Always Kill, something you write, that happened then at that time. People to this day will go, well, in that song you said this. That's yeah, not yeah. You know what I mean? As soon as you record anything, it's like, right, that's now on record forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Start to stray away from that and it's some kind of cheating of yourself and reality. Yeah, yeah. But again, you're at a point where you're going to be finding a lot of new music and developing your taste and developing what you're into. So how did that kind of feel as the band's are progressing, or were you just in that whirlwind?
I think,
enjoying it?
I mean, we were definitely in that whirlwind. I mean, yeah. but we never really felt, I don't know, like, I mean, it's a weird thing to say, but I, you know, for instance, like if I was in a taxi, I was in a black cab,
yeah.
and the driver would say to me, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to say I'm in a band, and he'd say, what kind of band? And I would feel embarrassed to say I'm in a pop band.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd say I'm in a rock band or something. Just like, and then, you know, or I'd be embarrassed to say the name of my band in case he'd heard of it.
Yeah.
And there was a period of my life where I kind of felt very awkward and embarrassed about what had happened for some reason. You know,
it's
like,
really odd because,
yeah.
again, you kind of, and obviously we'll kind of get to the breakup and there was elements of that in there.
Yeah, film, yeah.
But it's such a weird combination because feeling that slight shame or slight where else, and again, I think it's tough because it'd be amazing, again, which we're going to get to as you're back now, but if you guys had happened 10 years later, because it feels like now there's not like pop isn't such a dirty word anymore.
Completely.
It's acceptable
completely changed.
For there to be amazing pop music. Mm. People, it doesn't have to be a guilty pleasure. It can just be a pleasure. People can go, this
totally.
Pop song's really good.
Yeah,
really,
totally. Shake It
makes
Off
me
is
feel
one of the best
nice.
Pop songs
yeah.
in the last 5 years.
It makes me feel nice. It's really enjoyable. But you didn't have that. So that weird thing of feeling any kind of shame over what you do, but then equally, I can only imagine that when you're standing in front of tens of thousands of people, that must just be overwhelming pride and be so pleased and proud of it. So it's just a weird combination of emotions to be going for, I guess, from being on the verge of it pushing you towards arrogance, I'd imagine. Because again, you're smashing it in front of thousands of people. You should feel like you're the bollocks at that point. It's quite understandable to
you.
But then at the same time, you're in a black cab and you're kind of ashamed to say who you are. You're kind of like,
I think it's a weird point in your life, isn't it? Because I think when you're about 19 or 20, I think, well, for me anyway, I think a lot of people give a shit what their mates think.
Yeah.
You know, so, and like for me, that was a big thing. Like I just wanted to be cool, you know, and I felt like maybe I wasn't, you know, and it was a real kind of mind fuck for me was that kind of thing.
And your level of coolness is now thrust into the views and opinions of millions of people who it wouldn't have been.
Completely.
So now there's millions of people saying you are or you aren't cool. Mm. So it's, again,
and,
that age.
And going,
fuck,
to, going to concerts and going to watch bands that I loved and getting shit in the crowd from people there was a really fucking annoying part of my life.
Yeah. You know,
because I was like, I love this shit. Like, I deserve to be here just as much as you do. But because of what I did for my music, you know, I kind of necessarily wasn't accepted there.
We had a little evening out the other day, Ayumi and Ricky Hall, and I told you at that point that for years I'd always defend Matt from Busted, again, that's your full name, because I was at a gig at the Purple Turtle in Camden, and I saw you there, and it was Not Twisting Themselves, and it was cool kind of alt psych prog with rap and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it was
and I was
amazing,
like, this dude's into good shit. It's like, this is fine. This is, man, you know, I can back this guy. He's got good taste. But again, I can imagine at gigs I like that, you will be self-aware because you're a pop guy. You're trying to enjoy a night out. But again, particularly at that point, anyone who was into alternative stuff hated pop. Again, it's completely different now. You'll have metalers who love Taylor Swift and stuff like that, or Bieber even, and things like that. So, but at that point, there would be people, it's that pop guy.
Yeah. For instance, we did a photo shoot and interview for Kerrang today.
Yeah.
You know, that...
And that cracks me up, because at that point, they wouldn't have gone near
you. We were public enemy number one to Kerrang. We were like...
Which is crazy, because they loved Sum 41. And Sum 41 were as pop and as saccharine as you guys were.
But
I think, do you know what I mean?
I think what's to blame, really, is the way we were marketed.
Yeah.
Like, we were marketed as a pop band, and especially to very young fans.
To young fans, yeah, I was going to say.
You know, so that instantly puts you out of that,
of that world
and kind of you know, knocks your cred.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that was kind of what the issue was. Whereas we behaved very much like any other band. You know, we rehearsed, we wrote the songs, we went and played them on the record, you know, we kind of did all that stuff. So it was...
That's what's really interesting.
Yeah.
Is at a time when there was a lot of stuff auto-tuned, written by someone else, performed by someone else in some cases and instances.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys were a proper band, writing your own stuff, playing your own stuff. Mm. Yet, because you were marketed as a pop band, it was then discredited in that way.
Completely,
you did lose any credibility.
And I think that was hard for me, but I think it was exceptionally hard for Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, I think he really, like, mate, he fucking hated that. You know, like, and he hated... You know, I think because he came from that world.
I was going
to say, me and James developed that love for that music.
Yeah.
Charlie, from a very early age, was like, you know, into metal and into kind of hard rock.
You're answering a band added enemy. That's traditional indie band rock kind of. Do you know what I mean?
That's real ground
roots. That's not, you're not going to apply for that expecting to be a pop band.
Yeah,
you're going to apply to that going, right, I want to play music, I want to be in a band. So, yeah, I can understand how that... But again, it's so stupid, because what you're getting hate for there is succeeding.
Yeah, yeah.
How backwards is that?
That's crazy.
You're getting hate for working really hard,
and
it paying off, and it going well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
Fucking mental, isn't it?
It's ridiculous.
It's mental,
I completely understand that kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
So did that all... Did that, number one, cause you guys to... Again, my instant thought is, would that mean you'd party any harder or things like that, in either an attempt to ignore that or an attempt to prove, look, no, we are credible.
I think there was a bit of both of that. You know, for me, I think, you know, I always wanted to be, you know, it's difficult for me because when I think about it, I've always been a little bit uncomfortable in any kind of social environment or any kind of social thing. So what I liked is that the fact I could be fucking Matt from Busted.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I could just be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I knew who that guy was because I could play him very well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so that's what I did, you know, but then.
It's kind of, it answers a lot of questions before you're in the room as well. Do you know what I mean? Again, you're very much your, as you said, you're appearing as that character.
Yeah. Yeah,
a certain amount of the conversation is over. You don't have to have the awkward social thing of, oh, hi. Oh, what's your name? What do you... It's kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
You get to go straight to that. I'm this person. You're that person.
Great.
There's the girl from Atomic Kitten. There's, you know, yeah, all yeah, that. Yeah. Your character's in that room already, and therefore yeah. you can just get straight to playing that out, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of what I did for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so just was that guy.
So when did it kind of start to fall apart? Because it was actually quite a short career in that section, wasn't
yeah,
it? Really,
I think
it was kind
of not many people realised that.
Yeah,
you know, we were only around for just about under 3 years.
Under 3 years,
you know,
that's
like
crazy,
we
it?
Kind of we broke up in kind of January or February 2005.
Yeah,
you know, so it was about just under 3 years.
Yeah,
you know, so it's yeah, it's crazy. Fucking mental. You know,
so how was that? That was, I mean, it was obviously quite public at the time of a lot of tension, and again, as you said there, of Charlie kind of not really feeling the lack of credibility that was brought out from the pop success, I guess, or from the way you were marketed.
Also, he was fucking miserable, man. Yeah. For the last year of Busted, we kind of we did a tour of America, and we did this this kind of like we did an MTV show there, and we kind of tried to kind of go and do the America thing, yeah. but. Which was the worst timing ever, because Charlie's foot was already out of the door, you know. And
it's fucking hard, man. Like I've only toured America a couple of times, but again, just purely, I mean, purely on a physical level.
Yeah, completely.
It's fucking hard. It's a big place, and it's not like two in the UK. Again, every American act who's supported us will be like, "Oh, we got a long one today. It's a 5-hour drive." They're like, "That's a short." One in America. In America, it's physically taxing. It really is.
Yeah, completely.
Huge
like, we drove for a week and we were still in fucking Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, it's just like, what the fuck is going on? You know, so
it's an intense time. The closest when me and Dan did a 1-month tour in America, I penned a resignation letter to Dan. I never ended up sending it, but it was exactly the same. I was there going, I fucking hate this. And there's a guilt because you're doing what every kid dreams of doing. You're in a band, you tour in America, and you're sitting there miserable. So it's particularly if one foot's already out the door, that's a really hard thing to put on three lads.
Completely,
to be able to stick together and pull through.
Mm. I think that was really the end. But I think the tour before that as well was hard for him as well. You know, I think you know, he was just really unhappy, and he really fucking hated being Busted.
Yeah.
You know, he just hated it. You know, he hated all the bullshit that he had to do and the fucking magazine shoots that he had to do. That, you know, like, it was nothing. Suddenly, I think you get to a certain point because of your music.
Yeah.
You get to a certain level.
Yep.
And then everything becomes about everything else apart from the music.
100%. You know, and again, if you're anything in pop, then they're going to ask you, they're going to feel okay to ask you to do more bullshit stuff.
Yeah.
So it will be silly photo shoots or whatever else, which if you're all into it, it's fun. If you're not into it, it's the worst day in the world, because you're having to be silly, and all the time you're questioning how that's going to come across, what the interpretation's going to be.
Completely.
And you're meant to just be being three lads enjoying yourselves.
Now, I wouldn't give a fuck. Like, if you put me in a silly photo shoot, I'd be like, fuck great. Right, you know, this is fun.
Yeah.
You know, but then it was the worst fucking thing, you know,
just
to be doing that.
Every moment.
Yeah. So, and I think for, you know, Charlie was really suffering then, and he just hated it, and he just and then he started Fight Star, which was his little side project band, which he didn't even tell James about. He kind of just did it on the sly for about 6 months. And and then
because I say they did come quite swiftly after he left.
Kind of thing.
So completely. That's obviously a bit of a planned thing there. But then also, I mean, a hell of an uphill struggle for the lad, because of the credibility thing.
Mm.
He's Charlie from Busted.
Completely. And do you know, and what there is, yeah, he is. And the thing is, there's, it's so fucking mental to think about it, because in lots of different genres of music, Busted weren't, like, no one really cared.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you go into hip hop, no one cared about if you were Matt from Busted.
No,
exactly. No, if you go into, I know, R&B, no one was like, hey man, how you doing? You know,
yeah.
But you go into the rock world
yeah.
and people fucking hated Busted.
Yeah.
You know, and Charlie literally went and plugged himself right in the middle
in the
of that fucking
area
Lion's
to get
Den,
over,
you know. So it was a real struggle for him, I think, you know. And he had a fucking, you know. But eventually, it worked.
Pushed hard and worked.
Yeah,
it
worked.
He kind of won people over.
Mm.
So what was kind of the? How did that impact you and James at that point? Were you like, right, what do we do? Do we continue? Do we replace Charlie? Do we continue? Do we stop? What
I think
what
that was never an option.
It felt like Charlie had. As you said, as it had been kind of on the slide, Charlie had an exit plan, and you guys were kind of like, oh, shit, this has happened now.
Yeah,
what do we do?
Well, that was exactly it. You know, yeah. We kind of both. I mean, even though I saw it coming,
yeah,
you don't fucking. I never really kind of thought about it enough to think about what was actually happened once that happened.
Yeah,
you know. So and also I kind of thought, yeah, but he won't fucking leave. You know, like, yeah, you know, it'll be all right. You know, we'll do another 2 years or something, you know. Like,
it's weird how when you're in that bubble, that all makes sense.
Yeah, again,
the fact, I'm sure at the time that felt like a massive betrayal and whatever else. But again, equally, I can say, dude, being in a band when, as you said, you're miserable, that's a horrible, like,
that's a horrible
thing. No one should have to go through that. Completely. You know, you're well in your right to go, no.
Yeah, yeah.
No, completely. I'm not doing this. Any job that you're miserable in, you should, obviously, our finances permitting, be able to go, I don't want to do this anymore. It's horrible.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
So it's a weird one. I'm sure at the time it felt like a massive, to be honest, a fuck you to you guys.
Even
but
at the time, I got that.
Yeah.
You know, like, because I knew how fucking miserable it was. Yeah. And I talked about it with a few times with him. You know, and he was really, you know, he really hated it.
Yeah.
You know, so it was...
Were you enjoying it still at that point? I said,
yeah.
I know there was a level of question of credibility and things like that, but still.
But I always saw a light enjoyment at the end of the tunnel with that. Yeah. I always thought, right, our next album, we'll do what we want to do.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, our next album, we'll do this, and our next thing, we'll do this. You know, and unfortunately, we never really got to make that, you know, but I was starting to come round to the idea that Busted could be whatever the fuck we wanted it to be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was starting to think like that. And then, you know, then he left and we were just like, you know.
It's such a weird one, isn't it? Because with anything like that, it's trying to get up enough of a head of steam to be able to have the control to do what you want. And again, that might mean a little bit of doing what the label wants or doing what this wants or doing what the management want or whatever else. But you're running towards that point where you can go, right, it's us now and we can do what we want. But then it's finding when that, there's always something adding
jump,
on to
when's
that.
When's that jump off period?
There's always something adding on to that to go, well, we are big, but if we just keep doing this, then we can get that bit bigger. And when we do our thing, it can have this impact or whatever else.
I remember our agent talking to us, you know, at Wembley. We just played like 12 nights at Wembley, right? Which is fucking insane, right?
Tremendous.
And he was talking in the dressing room about Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
We were like, fucking what? Yeah. You know, it was mental talk. Yeah. Like, it was crazy. No pop act at that point was doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was mental, you know. So it's it was a very, you know, and thinking about it now, I can just, you know, I was like, right, great. Because then we can get there and then we can be the fucking biggest band and we can do whatever we want, you know, right? You know, like, which is crazy to think, because you can really, if you want, do whatever you want, whenever you want.
At any point. And, you know, again, it's I always remember when I did this with Kate Nash, Adele and Jack Peñate, because all three of them I used to gig with a lot back in the day. And by each of them, by the time their first album was coming out, there was so much hype and stress and pressure on it. And each of them, I kind of just, I sent a message on the day just going, take a minute at some point to just realise that you've got a record in a shop. And that's wicked, because it's so easy, even at that point, to go, man, where is it in the top five? Shut up for a second. You've got a record in a shop and you can go in and buy that. That's amazing.
And people are going to listen to your music on their own.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, how amazing is that?
And equally, you've done 12 nights at Wembley Arena. Yeah, yeah. And what you're thinking at that point is, so can we do the stadium?
Yeah,
you're
exactly,
not, you're not sitting there thinking, how mental is it?
It's
we've just done
mental.
12 nights
at
Wembley. You're thinking, look over there where we could be going.
Completely,
it's a really weird one. And it's part of how that industry is built, I feel. I feel it is really easy to get so focused on what's ahead for you, equally who's around you. We've just done 12, but this other band have just done 15.
Completely.
Band are doing that. And it's like, cool, good for them, but what you've done, man.
That's fucking awesome. True, man. That's so true. You know, like, that's something which we're very much about right now. It's about just doing what we want to do and keeping in our world and making it sure that we're happy within us, you know, rather than thinking about anything else, because that's what derails you.
It's a beauty of having that time off and having a bit of maturity and stuff like that and stepping away from it. I remember when I did my solo record, it was on my own label. So I was like, right, I've got no one else to pressure me into caring about the charts or anything else. And at that point, I got to go, if Zane likes it, that's wicked.
Because that's really my market.
It doesn't matter if I get daytime radio one and so on and so forth, because it's like I'm getting love on the right show and in the right... And do you know what I mean? Having that, the wherewithal to appreciate the achievements you're making rather than, as said, to be constantly chasing what's...
What's
next. So, so what was next? Obviously, you've kind of... You've just lost a third of the band.
And, I talked to James on the phone, you know, because James got told by his dad that Charlie had left the band, you know, because Charlie didn't actually tell us. He kind of, my management told me and James's dad told him, our management told James's dad and James's dad told him, you know,
To step in, Jeff, quickly, because to anyone listening, that probably sounds like a bit of a piece of shit move that you've not the guts to say it, but equally... When you're in the touring world, it's such a weird bubble and weird world. And me hearing that, I'm like, that doesn't sound ideal, but I can understand where that could come from and how that could happen.
When you
become, again, if you've been in each other's pockets, hard to kind of engage.
And also have conversations.
The ideal situation would be to sit down with the three of you and go, look, here's what it is. But number one, if you don't want to be talked out of it, or number two, if this or that, it might be,
Yeah, I think there's some, as a band, we were very terrible at talking.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that's just being men as well. We're just very bad at talking about stuff, you know, so we never really brought anything up.
When you're in each other's pockets so much, because it's, if you've got a lot of time apart, then you can be, right, when I see the boys, here's what we need to discuss.
Mm.
If you're seeing each other constantly, where's that point where you switch from just hanging out to going, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But by the way, lads, I'm leaving the band.
just
by the way, I forgot to mention, I'm leaving the band.
See you later.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Enjoy your life. Yeah, so it's, it's fucking mental, isn't it? You know, you never really kind of, we never really talked about anything like that, you know, so it would have been weirder him coming to us and talking to us than being told by our manager, And to be honest, I saw it coming. Like when we found out that he was, when I got told that Charlie was leaving, you know, Charlie would no longer be in Busted. And what did you want to do? You know, was a big thing, because I was like, fuck, do we replace him?
Yeah.
Do we get someone else? But Busted to me was the three of us. Yeah. So anything else would have been just a bit shit. And also no one was interested in me and James beforehand. Do you mean like, so I was always like, you know, without chart, you know, like, it just felt very fucking weird to us.
It is really odd. I'm trying to think back just as a completely not knowing anyone in it at the time, but my perception at the time was always that James was kind of pushed as the writer as such, despite the fact you all worked together. It was kind of James kind of writes the songs. You were, in my mind, the most recognisable one. But again, Charlie was still obviously a very... valid part, but again it's interesting that you'd be weren't interested in us too, this, that, and
I kind of saw Charlie as the front man, and I still kind of do, you know, even though we all three sing, we all write the songs, we all do everything, I still see I always see Charlie as
he's the biggest figure
but he's, you know, he is kind of that figure, you know, and especially now I think the new record we've made, he's very much, we've kind of taken that kind of and run with that a little bit more, you know, we kind of want him to be that, you know, so it's
great.
Yeah,
so you heard from James's dad
that
James left the band, and you obviously decided that you weren't going to replace him. So did you guys kind of go, right, we're going our separate ways, or did you
I think I got a phone call from my from the record company, you know, and they said to me, you know, Matt, you know, so we know what's obviously happening, you know, we would like to sign you as a solo artist.
Right.
You know, like immediately, this was like before we'd even done the press conference to announce that we were splitting up. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. You know, all right, that's what I'm going to do.
Particularly
at a time
like that, that's kind of ideal.
It's almost
exploitative, because you are kind of, what am I going to do? Oh, we'll sign you. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for that. Oh, brilliant. Oh, amazing. I had no idea. I do know what to do with the rest of my life. I'm going to do what they've told me I'm going to do. Yeah, great. Yeah. you know, when really, like, I never wanted to be solo ever. Like, right. I've never, ever entered my mind of being solo artist.
Yeah.
Not once. You know, so it was, so really, if I thought about it now, I probably wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just at a time when I was just like, well, I don't know what the fuck else I'm going to do, you know? So yeah, great, brilliant, sign me up, you know?
How was it working on a solo record? Because I'd imagine that if the label approached you about it, and again, you're in kind of a moment of spinning round turmoil, it's not going to be that, here's the record I always wanted to make. It's going to be the, here's not what they're telling me to make, but what needs to be made at the, do you know what I mean?
Here's kind of a bunch of songs that I've written.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what it was. You know, like, here's a bunch of songs that I've written over the last kind of 7 months.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what that record was. You know,
some stuff.
And don't get me wrong, I had an amazing time making that record. Yeah. I had really good fun. But I think at that point in my life, I was in a very fucking weird point and I wasn't really mentally stable enough to do anything good.
Yeah.
You know, it was not really, but at that point, towards the end of Busted, I'd started drinking really heavily and getting really into drugs. And it was kind of, it was becoming more and more of a problem. And then when the band split up, it just kind of, it became more to the surface, I think.
You're a young man with a decent amount of money and public exposure who just now had a focus for all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're touring and you're doing this and you're doing that. And now that focus has been pulled away. The public exposure and the money and everything else hasn't. So again, you're gonna. It's natural. It's almost predictable that you might run into the darker sides of alcohol and drugs and everything else and addiction.
Yeah, I think so. But then I think about that and I think I saw this from a very early age, with drinking drugs. Like it wasn't like it wasn't like I don't blame it on the band split.
Right. I
had a problem like from when we were 13 drinking cider down the park. I would drink until I puked and passed out. You know, I was always like that. You know, and my mates were always like, fucking Matt loves it. You know, I was always that one who would just take too much. I'd always double drop. I'd always do everything. I was always that kind of guy. You know, so it was inevitable, really. You know, I think it just became, once I had more time on my hands and not necessarily the schedule, you know, that I had to keep, it just became easier for me to kind of decline.
There's no end or limit to it at that point. It's interesting as well, man, because we can sit there and identify that as a problem.
Mm.
And again, I don't drink much anymore. I know you're sober.
I don't drink.
And so it's kind of... But equally, I also know that when I was growing up, what you've just said there, like, Matt's the king of the group.
Mm.
Because he's the one that will keep drinking. He's drinking the most. Totally. He's double dropping and all this kind of thing. It's like, that's the best one at that point and at that era and that growing up. Now you can go, oh, no, that's someone who we should be having a quiet word with and going, is everything cool?
Well, the thing is, that's so funny you said it because I had so many of those conversations.
Yes.
You know, throughout my life, I kind of, since the age of about 17, I got sat down and had those conversations
with
different kind of big figures in my life, you know, and I kind of, and I just thought they were fucking mental.
Yeah.
And I was like, mate, I'm doing the same as what my mates are doing.
Just enjoying myself.
I just happen to be around you all the time, so you see it, you know, my mates are doing exactly the same as me, blah, 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 you know, but when really they weren't, you know, because they had a job and they went to work and, you know, whereas for me, it was perfectly acceptable to be completely pissed at 2 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yeah.
That's completely fine because you're in a band.
You're doing exactly the same as your mates, but you're cycling through mates throughout the week.
You're doing it with
one set of mates on the Monday.
They're
then not doing it till the weekend, but you're doing a different set of mates on Tuesday and so on and so forth.
That's exactly it, you know.
Yeah.
And
it's troublesome.
Yeah, so it's it was a very weird time, you know. So I think that solo record kind of reflects that a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think it was it was a very weird period.
So was it around that time you started to clean up on all that? Because you had a brief stay in one of the
went to rehab about four times.
Oh, really?
I kind of went to different centres and different places. I started going out with who's my wife now, Emma.
Yeah.
And about 6 months later, I checked into rehab because I was kind of, I was supposed to go and make this solo record.
Yeah.
And I couldn't fucking stay sober. Like, I couldn't get a day in the studio. Like, I wouldn't turn up. I was, you know, so I think everyone was kind of bollocking me, and I was kind of like, fuck,
I need to sort this out.
I need to fucking do something. So, so I just went, I know, I'll go to rehab, because, like, then they'll shut up.
Yeah.
You know, and so I went there, you know.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
The mentality of going there to get out of trouble rather than to get help.
That's all it was.
To go, well, I need that. I've done it now.
Yeah, and once I go to rehab, they can fucking back off, because, you know, like...
I've been to rehab.
I've been to rehab. I know what I'm doing. You know, I'm fine. I'm cured. You know, so so I did that, and then I came out, and within a month, I was a fucking mess again. And, but I made a portion of the record then, and kind of then I kind of kept kind of going through phases of being worse and worse, you know. And then I kind of clean my act up a little bit, and I get things which I thought under control, excuse me.
Yeah.
And then it would go tits up again, which I think is just the same for any kind of addict, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of you have portions of darker times and better times, you know.
Mm.
But you're always pissed.
It was really interesting. John Jones was on Joe Rogan's a podcast recently.
Oh, really?
And it was an interesting chat on that, because he was talking about addiction and saying, no, it was like, I don't think I'm an addict. I'm stopping now for my career, but I think I can return and have it under control and all that. And Rogan, being the legend that he is, quite open, was like, that sounds like an addict, dude.
Yeah,
That sounds like a problem. He was saying, with all due respect, all my mates who were addicts were addicts until they said, I have to stop forever now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's that. It was never I've got it under control. Do you know what I mean? It is one of them.
Completely.
So,
and the thing is,
you maybe had that outlook of, I'll clean up a bit to get the record done, but I've not really got a problem.
So,
and again, I think that's a common mentality as well.
Mm.
It's not really a big deal. It's not really, I'm just
a bit down.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm just a bit stressed. I'm just a bit like, I just need to, I need to move house. I need to, you know, like, I just don't know where I live. I've got the wrong group of mates. I've got this, you know, maybe I shouldn't drink wine. Maybe I shouldn't drink beer, you know,
Specific reasons, all this fucking shit
that I went through, you know, like, maybe I'll just do drugs on the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, all this kind of stuff, which is just all this shit that I did, you know, for years and years and years, which just, eventually, you know, like, I remember I was getting married, and then it was, about 6 weeks before my wedding.
Yeah.
And my wife was away working. She was doing a TV show. And so I was at home on my own, and I it just got, you know, ridiculous. And I kind of, so I phoned up my drugs counselor and checked myself into this another place. Like, because I tried all these kind of swanky kind of great places that were apparently amazing, you know, and it just felt like I was at a hotel that kind of, you know, they just, well, we had to go and do boring stuff during the day, but it was quite nice.
Yeah.
You know, so my drugs counselor went,
it shouldn't be nice.
Maybe it should be
unpleasant. Exactly. Maybe that's the point of it.
And he said, I know what you need to do. And he sent me to this place in Bournemouth, which was amazing. It was called the Providence Project. And it kind of, and from being sat in places like the Priory, where I was sat next to kind of city bankers and, you know, and all these kind of, you know, Russian millionaires and stuff like that, all sat in a circle talking about how hard their life was. I was suddenly sat in a therapy room with a guy next to me who, if he didn't come to this room, was going to be in jail for the next 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was just like, right, this is fucking, right, okay, shit. You know, like, and also, I wasn't sitting there and going, fucking hell, these guys are bad. I'm not as bad as this.
Yeah.
I was sitting there going, oh, shit, I do that.
And that's really important.
I do that.
Because I think a lot of people who go to those kind of places do exactly what you said. They go, oh, I'm not as bad as them.
Mm.
It's like, well, again, it's all, that's not the point of them. And it's all relative. You may not have lost your family because of drink, but you've missed a whole week and however many grand a day studio because you've not bothered to turn up.
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
it's all different things. It's all relevant. They couldn't miss.
Everyone always
30 grand worth of studio time.
Yeah, just
you know, so it's
Everyone has their own rock bottom, I think. Yeah. You know, and
everyone has their rock bottom. And yeah, you went and to I this think, place in Bournemouth.
I think what they say in AA is look for the similarities, not the differences. Beginning of every meeting, they say that. And I went to AA meetings for years, and I never really fucking took that on board.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it made more sense than anything ever in my life.
Yeah.
Because I sat there and I saw similarities in everyone that spoke. And everybody that fucking talked, I was like, I am exactly like you in so many fucking ways. I may come from a different part of town. I may have a completely different life to you. But there's something that is wrong with me that is wrong with you, and there's something that we all share, and and you know, and also then I'd hear people talk and I go, but you got better, and you now seem to be a proper human.
You seem to have this,
you know, like, how are you doing this? You know, like, and they talk about all this kind of, you know, about how you feel around other people and how you feel socially, social anxiety and all this kind of stuff, which really resonated with me because that was kind of, a big hitter for me, you know, like, kind of like, oh fuck, so you deal with this too, but you seem like a really,
you seem to
have your shit together, you know, like, how is this, how does that work for you?
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's fascinating as well, because I think what a lot of people don't realize is that everyone appears to have their shit together.
Mm.
That doesn't mean everyone does.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
So when you're sitting there not sharing your problems and whatever problems, because you're like, you feel, oh no, I'm falling apart, but no one else is, like, well, the person next to you or your best mate could well be falling apart in the exact same way.
Yeah,
sitting there going, I don't want to mention it because I'll look crazy or I'll look weak or I'll look stupid. Yeah, it's like, no, everyone's got these fucked up weird lives and problems, and sharing it should be part of that. That should be a key part of it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's something about, you know, there is something about that. Yeah, it's a weird thing, but I think that was, and then, so I came out of that, about 2 weeks before I got married. No, 5 days before I got married.
Yeah.
And then I got married 5 days later, and then everything was going great, and I was going to meetings, I was doing it, then I fucked up again.
Right.
You know, and again, and again, and again, and again, again, which really kind of, but this time something had changed, I think, you know, which I hear a lot of people in recovery talk about. Something had changed because I knew too much now. Do you know what I mean? Like, something had hit me, and I knew my behavior, and I knew how I was acting, and I knew what I was doing, and I wasn't able to cover this up anymore, and I wasn't able to be okay with it within myself. I wasn't okay to justify my actions. I knew what I was doing, and I was still doing it.
But you'd learned enough to not believe your own excuses. You couldn't pull those excuses anymore. It's like, I know that's bullshit.
I know
that's not true.
Yeah, there's no reason for you to be drinking at 9 o'clock in the morning whatsoever. Yeah. You know, just because you've had a heavy night and it gets rid of your hangover is not a good enough excuse.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, you know, and I think all those kind of things just came crashing down. And then I had, so then I got sober, and then I had, you know, a baby, and it kind of, you know, I think that really, you know, but that was what.
That's got to be a massive.
Yeah, completely.
Kick up the arse completely, as well, right?
Because the last time I relapsed was on March the 20th, about 8 years ago now.
Yeah.
And I relapsed because I went to this TV show, and I was doing this like panel show, and it was the last one in the series.
Yeah.
I've been sober about 4 months, and I went there, and it was the last show in their run of shows.
Yeah.
So they had a party like in the dressing room, and they just offered me a glass of champagne, and I didn't even fucking think about it. I just necked it immediately.
Sure, bang, yeah.
And then I was off, and it was just one like insane night, you know, and I kind of woke up the next morning in with you know, kind of the most kind of regret and kind of, you know, and shame and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, which was horribly, you know, prominent in my life.
Yeah.
You know, so I just woke up with that feeling, and I just went, you know, and also I kind of I saw my wife, and I saw my baby, and I couldn't be around them because I was not in a fucking mental state to be around them.
It's horrible.
And it was so, you know, it was awful. So and that moment I said never again, you know. And I just kind of and then every day from that moment I say that every day, and I kind of want to you know, and I meet people all the time who kind of talk to me about this kind of stuff, because I think we kind of run into people who have these kind of problems all the time, you know, and a lot of people don't necessarily know there is a different way, and there is a way that you can, you know, because I thought that I could never be sober ever.
Yeah.
You know, like, I couldn't imagine fucking being, you know, even talking to somebody with not having some kind of substance in my body would have been the fucking most terrifying thing on earth.
Yeah.
You know, now I don't even think about it. It doesn't even cross my mind.
It's having the confidence it's knowing that you can do it. Mm. It's such a powerful thing. It's like you've done it. And I think abstaining from things is, if you can get a bit of a head of steam there, is such a powerful thing. Because then it's like, right, again, that time when you'd been clean for 4 months, that must have killed, because it's like, right, that's fucking, I'm at fucking square one again. I'm at zero again.
Yeah, yeah,
shit,
completely.
That's 4 months. Mm. And again, now, eight years in or whatever, it's I can't imagine any drink could be appealing enough to make you throw away eight years of, you've got that, you've got, it's like,
you know, totally, man. I mean, I kind of, I met someone once who said to me, you should never go inside your own head without an adult present.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, and it's the most fucking true thing anyone's ever said to me, because if I start to, you know, and if I was to take something or do something which would make me go inside there, I'll fucking traumatize myself, you know, so I just stay the fuck out my own way now and just enjoy, you know, just being,
I love it,
you know, clear headed.
So there's a lot of growing up there in going through addiction and getting off of stuff. There's a hell of a lot of growing up in parenthood.
Mm.
Again, I think I always remember in the days, again, it would have been around the 2000s and 2002s kind of time, of being in a metal club in Romford, in Hollywood, with my mate, and a mate of mine was saying how sad it is a friend of ours has got two kids, so he can't come out. And at the time, I was like, yeah, sad. And then I look back now, it's like, we were standing there drinking whatever the cheapest drink was, trying desperately to get a girl to pay us any attention, which they never ever did.
Yeah.
He's at home with his beautiful kid, having a wonderful time.
And
in our minds, oh, it's so poor sad he's missing out on this. Poor guy. It's
poor
like,
dude, yeah.
Nah, not really. I think it's kind of the other way around.
Yeah, man.
So how's that been, kind of?
It's been incredible. Finding, you know, that. I mean, I've got three kids now, and it's
amazing.
You know, it really is, you know, it's the ultimate job.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like the ultimate kind of, you know, it's incredible. I get so much from them, like it's insane. Like we just had the weekend off.
You know,
and I just went to Birmingham with them. We went to this like Christmas fair and stuff.
Amazing.
And it's just, you know, these kind of things which I would have thought, fuck that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, going to a Christmas fair, I'm all right, thanks. You know, I had the fucking best time,
exactly.
You know? Like, I went to see Father Christmas, and I had totally awesome time.
It's licensed to enjoy yourself and be silly and enjoy stupid stuff. That's
completely. And just play. I love it. I'm a real, you know, I'm kind of a big fucking kid anyway, you know, so I really enjoy that. You know, I enjoy being able to play and muck around.
So has all of that kind of development allowed you to come to where you are with a busted reforming, or starting with the McBusted tour, which was, again, it seemed to come out of nowhere, and it was fucking massive, huge.
Yeah, it was insane. Yeah,
both the bands together playing all each other's hits and just having a good time. And it feels like the journey in between then, and I'm sure James and Charlie both had their own intricate growing up journeys, allowed you to all go, oh God, we were being oversensitive little pricks or whatever, or overthinking everything. It's like,
that's exactly,
let's go and jump about on stage in front of thousands of people. What a laugh.
Completely, man. Like, I mean, the McBusted tour especially was so much fucking fun.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, because
sound man was on it.
Because he was really?
He was the guy, the sound man for one of the support guys.
Oh, really?
And again, he was saying constantly, like, everyone's just having the best time. And again, he's always toured with very rock bands in rock clubs and all that kind of thing. He's like, everyone's just so happy. They're all just enjoying, you know, it's such a good time.
It was an amazing experience.
Such
a
party.
You know, I mean, it was just that fucking, because it was neither band, because it was not Busted and it wasn't McFly, it was this fucking thing that we were doing. Even though we were playing those songs, we were all in it. I was even more that character again.
Yeah.
I became Matt from McBusted and I played that role, you know, and I went over the top, and I gave them, you know, I was like, what do you think? We were all like, what do you think they like about, you know, like Matt from Busted or whatever? And I was like, right, okay, I think they like this and this and this. Right. So I'm going to go over the fucking top on that.
Brilliant.
And give them more than they ever expected, you know, like, so it's, you know, I think that was what was so fun about that band, because it wasn't
your knees
either
up
one.
From all the jumping.
Just about.
I've
got sore shins.
You can't do this.
Sore shins. You know, it's so funny you say that, because we had to fucking get better shoes about halfway through the tour.
Really?
Because we had to start, because I was wearing boots and stuff at the beginning, DMs and stuff. I was like, I can't fucking do this anymore. My shins are killing.
Good
to get running shoes.
Again, and we'll get on to this, but returning to touring when you're getting a bit older, you need a fitness regime.
As a
youngster, it's like, going to drink, going to party every night. It's like, that's not quite.
It's not going
to
work for me anymore.
I need to put on the show now.
Yeah, man, totally.
Yeah, so, that was a lot of fun.
It was amazing. It was a real, and like I said,
because that seemed it seemed to come out of nowhere and just perfectly timed. That
well, basically, James Bourne was writing with McFly for their new the record that eventually didn't come out because McBust had happened. But they were kind of writing for a new record, and James was writing songs with them. So James was in was going to Manchester to meet them, and they were going to do some writing on the bus.
Yeah,
and he went up there to meet them, and they were just like, do you want to go up on stage and sing some songs? He was like, yeah. So unannounced, with an acoustic guitar, like before McFly came on, he just walked out on stage and sung three songs, you know, with acoustic guitar. And the fucking place went insane.
Lost their shit.
Because they hadn't seen James Bourne for 10 years. Yeah. You know, like, so no one even, you know, like, he hadn't done anything. He'd been writing musicals and writing songs for other bands. And, you know, that's kind of been very much in the background, you know. And so no one had seen him. And he just walked on stage and they're like, is that that fucking guy from Busted?
Yeah.
You know, and he sung Year 3000. The place went fucking nuts.
It's such a weird, there's very few bands that, you'd kind of almost guarantee that everyone who was a McFly fan was a Busted fan.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? It's almost
this is why it was
to
a
the
marriage
note.
Made
it's
in
like
heaven. Like,
a perfect combination. There's not a lot of bands that have that.
No, there's
that
really
there.
Not. There's really not. You know, like...
In fact, a lot of bands goes at the opposite. With Pearl Jam and Nirvana, you like one or the other. You know, and all that kind of thing. There was
I remember
never
when there was the
like,
Blink-182 and Green Day co-headline tour. I was like, fucking perfect. Sign me up.
Yeah.
It was kind of that kind of thing, you know, for the pop world. You know, it was kind of... You know, so it was, it was amazing. And then, so he's kind of sung those songs and they went down amazingly. And everyone was just like, there's something in this, you know. And James phoned me and told me what he'd done.
Yeah.
He was like, I think you should come down to London. Like, I'm going to play again. Like, come down to London and see it. And I was like, really? People give a shit? That, you know, like, I was like, it's been like, I really didn't think people would care.
Yeah.
You know, and I went along to watch them at Wembley and they played, James played and the place went fucking insane. And I was just like, wow.
Did
like,
that just open your eyes and go,
mate,
I
mate,
need
it,
to get,
it was the most
I need
amazing
to get up
feeling.
There.
Because,
I need to get in there, mate.
Because, you know, I was, it was such an incredible feeling to people that they sung every word still. You know, I was like, I hadn't seen people sing Busted songs for 10 years.
And
I was
man,
like,
that must have been amazing. And again, an eye opener. Like we were saying, how when you're in it, it's all just you're looking at the next thing, you're not appreciating it. How rare to get the opportunity to. Kind of experience it as an audience member.
Completely.
Do you know what
completely.
I mean? To, that's a incredibly. Like, no one gets to see your own band as
an audience member
essentially and go, oh, wow, this is how it feels.
This is affecting people. Yeah. How fucking amazing. You know, it was a really, it was a standout moment in my life, actually. Like, I remember that feeling very well.
Yeah.
You know, and then I walked backstage and like, and we all just had this discussion and we're like, what about, well, they were like, you've got to fucking do Busted again. Like, did you see that? That was incredible. And I was like, we can't, Charlie won't do it. You know, and they were like, well, why don't we do, you know, why don't we do something together? Why don't McFly be your backing band and we'll kind of sing Busted songs? And we were like, so we're just kind of brainstorming that kind of idea and kind of just kicked around and we're like, well, why don't we just fucking do one big band and we'll just play each other's tracks and piss around, you know, and it'll be fun, you know, like, and we won't take it too seriously. And it'll be just a laugh, you know? And so we kind of went, yeah, cool. Let's do that. You know, so we had a photo shoot and then we announced a tour. And we announced like 11 arenas, I think, which I thought was a bit fucking cocky.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, you know, to be honest, no one knows what this is or and hasn't seen Busted for 10 years.
It's a completely
you know?
New thing. And again, the industry expert would say, oh, you need to book a few warm-ups, then they'll
completely.
Sell out and then we'll go big. But you went,
yeah,
you know, it would have felt like you're going straight in pretty fucking huge.
Yeah, completely. It was a real ballsy move, you know. But they sold out in like the... You know, like that, and
amazing.
It was just insane. Like, I mean, and we were really, you know, just blown away by it because you know, and it just went nuts and nuts and nuts.
I mean,
and
it's
just
a perfect
went on and on.
Storm because, as stupid as it is, just the way McBusted works,
as
you see that, you know exactly what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't need to be explained,
exactly.
And it's McBusted, right? All right, that's McFly and Busted. Then cool,
right, great.
It's just the stupidity of that is like, that sells it,
obviously. Yeah, great, brilliant. Yeah, so it was it was fucking nuts, and it just went and it was such an amazing tour, like that first tour, you know. And we played, we kind of ended that summer at Hyde Park,
you
know. So we headlined fucking Hyde Park, like neither band would have ever dreamed of doing that, like. But for some reason, these two fucking silly bands get together and we did that, you know. So it was crazy, you know. So so we had this amazing summer, but in the meantime, just before. So the first thing we ever did was we played played the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
And we went on the stage with McFly as some kind of special guest. So we're playing like a 10th anniversary show.
Yeah.
And me and James went on stage and sung two songs with them.
Amazing.
And This is the first gig. And I turned up for that gig that night. And James went to me just as we were about to go on. He went, "I've just met Charlie." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "What the fuck? What?" He goes, "Yeah, I just met him in a hotel down the road and had a bit of a chat. We've been talking for a little bit. I'll talk to you about it in a minute." I was like, "What? What the fuck?" You know, and then we ran on stage, you know, absolutely, and then we played that fucking show. I was like, "What the fuck are you going on about?"
Just tease that in there.
So, I'll talk to you about it in a minute. And then we were like, "Do, do, 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 do." I was like, "Fucking hell, we're on." You know, so me and James have been, you know, talking about, you know, possibility of doing Busted again for years, you know. We'd even met Charlie on a few different occasions. We met him once about 3 years ago, and we sat in his garden and told him we wanted to do Busted again. So it was before McBusted.
Yeah.
And he wasn't ready to do it at that time. And he kind of, he was just about to release another solo record. And he was kind of like, you know, I just can't see someone do that. You know, I'm just kind of fair enough. You know, and we were kind of like, well, look, we might do something with it. We're not sure yet. You know, we just thought we'd get your, you know, tell you what's going on, you know. And so the seed was kind of planted then. And we kind of, but we spent a couple of hours in his garden just chatting shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the best fucking time.
Yeah.
Like, it was so much fun. Like, we just sat there. He had a Spotify playlist on. And we all were all listening to the same music.
Yeah.
We were like, I love this fucking band. I love this band. You know, like I remember like Phoenix came on and we were all like banging on. And we all didn't know that we were listening to this band. And we were all just banging on about how much we loved this, you know. And I think, you know, to be honest, it was more James and Charlie needed a bit of, you know, a repairing to do, you know. They kind of, when they left the band, they were both on completely opposite scales of what they loved, you know.
Yeah.
And they hated the other one for loving what they loved, you know. It was a very weird kind of environment, you know.
Again, as said, it was at a time where if you liked rock, you hated pop and...
And
vice versa. So...
Completely, yeah.
The rocket that was put under you guys, you're either going to go, right, pop's fucking amazing. I want everything in pop. I want to know every... Or you're going to go... This is hideous.
What an ugly
world. Fuck this. That's why.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah. You know. So, so I think it was really interesting to see how that afternoon panned out. You know, in that garden, because suddenly it became much more about we were all just listening to music as music lovers, rather than you're from a certain scene or from a certain genre. And you know, it was just like we love this, and we love fucking Fleetwood Mac, and we love Bruce Hornsby,
and rather than you were Busted.
You
were just Matt, James and Charlie listening to music rather than that pressure cooker thing of this.
And we were all still exactly the same.
Yeah.
But with 10 years of experience that made us better people. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You know, without being too abrasive, it was so fucking awesome that afternoon. Yeah. And we went away. No, even though Charlie had said no, I had a little bit of a glimmer of hope of the possibility of doing something again with that. With those two guys, because something felt right, and it obviously felt right for Charlie as well, you know, because then while we were doing McBusted, we were talking to Charlie and we were kind of discussing whether or not we wanted to do Busted again. He was in, and he was like, "Yeah, I'll be up for it." You know, amazing. I've been talking about it myself a little bit recently, and you know, kind of discussing, you know, what Busted would sound like now and what kind of record we'd make, and it was very interesting. So, so we went off to. James had a friend called Eric Bazillion, who's like a songwriter. He's a legendary songwriter. He wrote that song, like "What If God Was One of Us,"
and, right?
You know, all these kind of amazing songs he wrote, and he's one of James's like idols. And he has a studio in Philly, and so we all flew to New York on separate flights.
Yeah,
and we got I got this shitty little hire car, and we drove from New York to Philadelphia together on this little road trip, and we went and recorded there for a week, and it was just fucking awesome. And I was just like. And we all kind of sat down and went, right, cool, let's do Busted again.
That's awesome. Yeah. How was it all writing together again? Because again, you will have all grown up in your musical tastes and you're there to write a Busted record, but what is Busted? Is Busted that band or is Busted you three now grown ups?
I think that is exactly the point. Yeah. I think... you know, first of all, we knew what we didn't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, we knew what we shouldn't do.
Yeah.
You know, and because, but we didn't necessarily know what Busted was going to be, you know, and I think the first time we went away writing, we kind of got one track that ended up being on the album, a song called Easy, but The rest of the stuff we wrote didn't make the album because it wasn't quite right, you know.
Right,
but
yeah.
But some, like, then the next trip, we wrote a song called Without It, you know. Yeah. And it was kind of, we're like, right, fucking, that's what we need to sound like,
right.
You know. We wrote something and we're like, this is the direction we want to go. And because we were all kind of massive, kind of, you know, everything we were listening to in the studio for sounds and sonics and stuff was kind of big 80s pop.
Brilliant.
You know, like big kind of like Genesis and Phil Collins and Fleetwood Mac and Hall & Oates and all these kind of bands.
Wicked.
You know. And so we were kind of listening to all this stuff, and it was kind of just, we're just like, we want to make a timeless sounding pop record.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just what we tried to do.
Amazing.
Yeah. And also, it was kind of, what was amazing was, you know, the fact that we hadn't been in a band together for 10 years, we were just impressing each other. Because
yeah.
we were like, fucking hell, you're amazing at that now. Yeah. Like, I remember when you were shit at the piano, now you're fucking incredible at the piano.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember when you fucking sucked at bass, you know, you're all right. You know, like,
I love that.
You know, so it was really amazing, you know, and it was, and it was a great experience writing, because it wasn't personal. It was just about writing songs for a band. It wasn't, it didn't become about you. It was just about writing, you know, just great pop music. And it was really fun.
Yeah. In that moment, it's really fun and beautiful and a connection. How much did that change, or how much did the nerves come in when you're then going, oh shit, now we've got to give this to the public, to the fans, to the,
the
people
who
grew up again. You'd hope that they've grown up with you. And their tastes will have developed and adjusted. But again, you can't go and write an 18-year-old's record.
Yeah,
you
and also you
that's
can't...
Not,
you
that
can't,
doesn't work.
You can't write what I go to work for.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because that's fucking shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, so you
should
so
write what I go to work for.
We said what I pay my mortgage for.
No, you said that.
So, you know, so it's... it's a funny thing, isn't it? You know, because... What is... You know, what you love, you know, like, but I think that's the thing. I don't know if I did think too much about that, because I think the biggest win for us was that, coming from where we come from, having a record that we all felt passionate and proud about was the most important
and
thing.
And from
to
where you left off.
Yeah,
from where you left off to have
exactly.
that.
Like,
and that's a beautiful
that's the
thing
point.
Then, because it takes any pressure off, because you've already achieved the goal.
It's a win.
You've made the record.
It's a win for us, you know. And if the public like it, it's a win-win.
Yeah.
You know. But it was definitely just it was just about that. It was just about having that win for us. And we made a record that I loved listening to on my phone.
That's wicked.
I loved it for like I had those songs on my phone for like six 8 months, and I loved listening to them. And I couldn't wait to play my mates them.
That's you perfect. Know, like,
it was just an awesome experience.
That's hugely important. That buzz.
Yeah.
I need to just go on record that. A guarantee now, the last ever Busted song is going to be What I Go to Work For. It's going to be on piano. It's going to be emotional about your kids. And it's going to be this beautiful, heart-wrenching thing about this is what we do it for. It's going to be massive.
It's
so you're touring starting in January.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all back. So when this comes out, it'll be just about to kick off. Or it might have just kicked off.
Right, cool. So we put the album out. We put the album out the other week. It's kind of out there.
Yep.
It's in the world now. People are listening to it.
Yeah.
Kind of vibing off of it. I think it's...
How's it been reaction-wise? Because, again, it's easy. What we discussed earlier when you were talking about some people don't think you're credible or whatever, we're referencing that you've got thousands or millions of fans and the focus is on the few who don't think you're credible. How's that now as a grown-up? Can you focus on... Because again, any art you put out there, there's going to be hopefully some that like it. Someone isn't going to like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Are
completely.
You being able to focus on the?
Oh, well, I
positive
I,
or the
I
negative
very
or
rarely read any
anything.
YouTube
yeah.
comments or any shit like that, because it's just a bad
that.
Idea.
Yeah.
You know. So I literally I mean, it's been an incredible reaction.
Yeah.
You know, but we see this as the beginning of something new. Like we really do. Like we've changed so much in Busted. Like this record that we just put out is unrecognizable as a Busted record. You know, like, so James said the other day that if you say you don't like Busted, you know, you'd have to not like Busted twice.
Yeah.
Because you'd have to not like Busted back in the day and now not like this other band who are completely different.
In which case, so, fair play, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair play.
You really fucking hate Busted.
Like
You know, so it's, it's amazing, you know, but I mean, the good thing about social media is you get to see what people are saying, you know, like, and I really enjoy interacting with fans about songs and about what they're vibing on. And, you know, it was daunting putting this out there because, you know, we kind of see this as such a massive departure that it doesn't necessarily, if you were a fan of Busted the first time, there's not you're not definitely going to be into this, yeah. you know, which is, you know, a fucking weird thing to do to your fan base, you yeah. know, is to give them something which they don't want.
But
you know?
It's a very real and honest thing to do as a writer and as an artist. Completely. Kind of going, right, you've yeah. got to write for you yeah. ahead of anything else. You
completely.
Know?
And we haven't tried to make anything, you know, too out there or too kind of like trying to fit on Radio 1 or anything like this. Yeah. We just wrote a record which we loved, you know, and yeah. then we just kind of put it out there and we're kind of seeing how this grows. And, you know, and so far it's been amazing. And we can't wait. We're doing the Night Driver tour in January, February. And that's, you know, that's... We've gone back to small venues, you know, when wicked. We played the first tour, the first Birds of a Busted tour, playing a lot of those venues again, like tiny little venues to kind of, and we're saying, look, this is, you know, we're playing
this is us.
Nine new songs,
yeah.
you know, and we're playing, you know, we're going to play maybe eight, nine old songs as well, but yeah. we're going to play nine new record songs. Yeah. So if, you know, you've got to know that before you walk in, because yeah. I remember going to see bands and they play a lot of their record and be pissed off. We've gone back to these venues so we can introduce people to this new band. You
here's
know?
What we're doing.
Here's yeah, what we're doing right now. Here's yeah. what we're about right now. And again, here's the band kind of, that we want you to
it's
get
kind
into.
Of a beautiful, because it's putting your hands up and paying your dues again. It's going, right, completely. We're going to start again. We're going to, as you said, you see this as a new beginning as such. It's good to hear as well that you're going to be playing old songs as well, because that, again, it's kind of key. It's kind
oh
of,
my
it's,
God,
it's,
yeah, totally,
it's such an
totally.
Important part of
totally.
Your life.
And people want, yeah, and I'm proud of those songs yeah, now. Yeah. You know, like, there was a period of my time, of my life where I couldn't stand listening to Year 3000. Like, yeah. it fucking angered yeah. me listening to that yeah. song. Now, love that shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, I put it on a fucking... And also, I love the way the crowd react to that song.
Yeah.
Like, it's like we've got this fucking ace in our back pocket.
Yeah.
That at any point, we can just play that ace and people go fucking nuts.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
How amazing is it to have yeah. that? You know, I mean, we I toured with Wheatus on our last tour.
Yeah.
James is friends with those guys.
Yeah.
And they've got that fucking ace up their sleeve.
They
you know, like,
totally
they've been making records for years and years and years. You
yeah.
know, like, and they still make records now. But they go out there and they know. But also, they fucking love it still.
It's quite interesting, you know? As well, because Teenage Dirtbag is, in many ways, quite different from what they were doing for
yeah,
years
yeah,
as
totally.
Well.
It's
still them, and it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
like they made this song to try and be pop, but it was an unusual sound for them.
Completely,
it's like,
yeah, yeah.
To have that to go...
And what they're doing now isn't like that either.
Yeah.
You know, but it's... But they've still got that little slice of your life that they can play at any moment, which is fucking awesome.
I love that. So, were there any songs that you were, or have you had to adapt the songs? Because again, if the new album's a very different sound, it's got to be hard. You don't want to go, here's nine new songs, here's nine old songs. You want to be mixing it up.
Yeah,
you want to be making it hopefully a comfortable flow.
This is what we're coming up against now, because first of all, when we went into the rehearsal room, we've got 3 weeks in January to kind of get the tour ready, but I think we've got just over 2 weeks together. I'm kind of I always go in for about 5 days before just with the drummer, just to kind of lock shit down. There's the two of us, but then we've got like about 2.5 weeks together to kind of make that shit come to place.
Yeah.
Because when we went into because we started to do tellies and stuff like that and promo and stuff for this record and little acoustic shows, we're suddenly like, fuck, how do we play this record? Because we're a guitar band, but there's no guitars on this record.
Right,
you know?
Right,
like,
right.
Like,
yeah, yeah,
fuck,
yeah.
what are we going to do? You know? So that was a real learning. Like, I'm a bass player and I'm playing a synth bass.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do? You know, so I've got to play a keyboard, which is weird. So I've got to learn a new instrument. But
I love it.
It's you know, it's been fun. You know, it's amazing and it's a real kind of and it's challenging and exciting. You know, so we love it. You know, we're just kind of making that work. How the new songs and old songs are going to gel together, I'm not quite sure yet. We're going to have to bring the old ones up to speed a little bit without making them unrecognizable. You know, we want them to still know what they're listening to.
Yeah.
You know, so it's
when you have that big. Those few weeks of practice to really get things tight, pay a lot of attention and text me and just let me know a which song Charlie's secretly hating playing the most. Because there's got to be something from the old
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've already dropped that song.
Oh.
That was,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
But
me and Charlie had this one.
One that you hated.
Yeah, we had this song called Thunderbirds, which we fucking hated.
Right.
And I just become really sick of playing it. And Charlie, I can see on his face, he's just like, oh, you know, so that's already gone.
Up?
That's gone forever.
And which one have you brought it up to go? Because
it was actually me.
Again,
and so I was
imagine
like, oh,
he was
fuck
like
for
so
that.
Happy. be. Oh.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I didn't want to be the one to say it, but...
Yeah, yeah, totally. So that one's gone. You'll never hear us do that one again, I think.
Perfect. Well, I'll round things up now. I wanted to obviously talk about I'm a Celebrity and all sorts of other stuff, but we've got tons in, and I appreciate your time, so thank you very much.
Yeah, totally, man.
Yeah, good luck with the tour and everything that's ahead. You, I assume thanks, the plan mate. After the tour is... to write more and continue
yeah
on this,
man we're just
journey,
we're doing
right?
we're doing lots of international stuff next year. We're kind of going to places we haven't been before and kind of trying to really, you know, we're doing a lot of Europe, a lot of Asia, you know, which will be fucking exciting. I can't wait to do all that stuff. So
that'd be amazing.
And then we go back in the studio at the end of next year. So
fantastic. Yeah, well, thank you very much for talking.
Thanks,
and I look forward to seeing it all.
Thanks, mate.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
And there it is. That was Mr. Matt Willis. I told you it was a good chat, didn't I? He's very open and honest. It's really interesting that addiction came up twice in a row, on last week's one with Rob Parker and on this week's one with Matt Willis. And they both pulled out the specific same quote in addressing it, which I thought was fantastic. I actually recorded the Matt Willis one before the Rob Parker one, so it's a bit confusing, but I wanted to put the Rob one out first, so it was in time for Taboo coming out, which launched last Saturday on BBC. Hope you all enjoyed it. Anyway, I'm rambling, and I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you for tuning in, guys. You know what? You don't even have to rate and review or tell your friends about this. Just the fact that you're listening is all that I care about. You know, on future episodes, if I do ask you to rate and review, then it's changed. But right now, all that matters is you, man. All that matters is that you're here and you're listening. And I appreciate that. You can find me on Twitter at @ScroobiusPipio or Instagram if you want to come holler at me. Other than that, I'll see you next week, as we do every week, because we've done at least one episode a week for, I think, over 2 years now, because we are the most consistent and reliable podcast coming out of the UK right now. It's a bold claim, but I think it's probably accurate. Right, I'm not saying we're the best, not by a long way, but we're fucking consistent. All right, I'm going to go. Have a good one. I'll see you next week. Ta-ta.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.